Well, as life progresses, and I'm talking about maybe you are at the start of your career, maybe you're around 30 years old, maybe you've got into a position where you've got your first home, things are going good, but you're in the prime of your life. I mean, age 27, come on, that's the prime time. Do you worry about pumping the mortgage or enjoying life? But what about if you are 50 and you've just spent 20 years smashing the mortgage? Same question. Do you really enjoy life or do you smash superannuation? Now, we're going to talk about this stuff today, about the trade-offs with living for the now and looking for the future. There's some good questions today. We'll also touch on some other things, regular incomes, and we'll even talk about certified money coaches. Hey, I just want to thank Sphere Home Loans for helping us bring you today's episode. A lot of people get confused with mortgage brokers. How they're paid? Do I get a better rate if I go direct to the bank or lender? Well, a couple of things. Mortgage brokers work on your behalf and go to the lender that's most appropriate. That lender pays the mortgage broker for basically doing all the work. And in the money world, basically mortgage brokers are a distribution method for banks and lenders. So all that to say is the same rates that you can get from your bank, you can get from a mortgage broker. But I've personally seen that you can get a better rate from your broker than going direct to a bank. And there is no out-of-pocket cost to use a broker. They get paid when the mortgage is settled from the bank. If you do want to review your current mortgage, if you want to get a new mortgage, or if you're a bit lonely and want to chat, you can reach out to Sphere Home Loans. Click the link in the show notes and they'll have a chat wherever you are in Australia. My name's Glenn James. Today I'm talking with Jess Brady. Welcome back to the podcast, Jess.
Thank you.
And this is...
Money.
Whoop whoop.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jess, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I wanted to get you back on for a couple of reasons. Number one, I'm kind of rotating the Tuesday seat on this show with other professionals.
The hot seat.
The hot seat. Mm-hmm. Yourself. We had Rebecca Pritchard on the other week, John, Shelley, just so there's a variety of voices. And the second reason, I want you to tell everyone what happened yesterday.
Yesterday was an exciting day.
Ooh, why?
Because we launched a new podcast.
We did.
You
so
did.
It is official. Jess's podcast has launched.
Mm-hmm. So it's called Financially Fierce
because
I want people to make bold and exciting choices with their money and feel confident about making, you know, brave choices and moving themselves forward. And yeah, it launched yesterday from the time where you reached out to me to be like, hey, I got an idea. Can we have a little tiny coffee?
Mm.
And that sort of migrated into us having a very long conversation about this. And here we are.
And here we are. So the first three episodes that we put up, because part of my launch strategy is I want to give people options, but also if they like what they hear, there's more to listen to right away.
Mm.
So there could be something for everyone. So the first episode, you're talking about financial empowerment. Now, this week it is International Women's Day week slash, I think, month. At this point,
mm-hmm.
Why don't they just do an International Women's Month?
I think it's sort of turning into that because the day is, there's too many events happening on the day. So that whole week is sort of
Because I was stressing out. I was like, oh, I need to do an IWD episode, blah, blah, blah. And then the more I looked into it, it's more, things happening kind of from this week and this whole month. So
yeah. And this year, particularly, given it's all around economic empowerment and again, International Women's Day is all around trying to create equality globally. I mean, this is an exciting theme for us in the money world.
Mm, yeah.
So yeah, I wanted to have one that was all around economic empowerment. What does that actually mean? How do you get there? What are the roadblocks and tips and tricks based on having given advice for a long time?
Yeah. And we know lots of you are yet to start investing and you want to learn how to invest more. There's two episodes, Investing Part 1 and Investing Part 2.
Yeah.
Now this podcast, it's 40 minutes per episode. It's Jess with the microphone. We're not doing straight into interviews and all that stuff. And you're just chatting and answering questions and talking about stuff. It's really awesome. And it's a real alternative If you are interested in more financial content from a woman who is awesome financial advisor, you see the world different than I do, and that's awesome because it is an alternative to this show or any other shows that are out there around money.
Yeah, I mean, when we were discussing it, I really wanted to think through, like, who would this best be for and what do I want to stand for and what are the things that I want to talk about? And for me, you know, I didn't grow up with money and there weren't podcasts and, you know, easily accessible resources. My journey was full of twists and turns, and luckily for me, I ended up in financial services and ultimately giving advice. But I wanted to help everyone from every background to feel more confident and empowered. And so this is not for one particular type of person. It is for anyone who's like, oh my God, I don't feel fierce with money yet, but I want to. And how do I learn about that? And how can I hear, you know, my hot takes? And you're right. Like I've got things to say and, you know, I don't always mince my words. And so if you're going to come and join me on Financially Fierce, then know that, you know, I am real and authentically me, and that means that I get really passionate and fired up about stuff. But I also love to talk about the success stories because so many people have come from feelings of shame and guilt and they've turned themselves around, and I want people to know that it's possible.
You've just really inspired me. Let's get into some of these questions today, particularly around the first half, and then I reckon what I might do after the break, I might just interview you.
Oh.
I mean, this is not planned.
Classic.
But it's like, it's an episode around, you know, launching your podcast, International Women's Day week. I don't know if I actually interviewed you around your actual money story.
No.
So let's get into some questions. Then after the break, I'll just ask you some questions and then maybe the listeners can get a bit more of an idea around you as a person, the way you see the world, the way you see money. And if you like the vibe of Jess, you can jump over and subscribe to Financially Fierce.
I love it. Let's do it.
All right. Well, Grace.
Hi, Grace. Okay. Grace asks, for people whose incomes can vary week to week, what do you do when there's extra on top of your base? Investing? Question mark. Savings? Question mark.
Yeah. So in the Glen James Spending Plan online course that's obviously free, I'm not trying to sell it, there is a module on irregular income. But the way I kind of see it, Grace, is we've all got basic expenses and we've all got variable expenses. Now, the way I would do this if I was, you know, plugging it into my own personal spreadsheet, the Glen James Spending Plan spreadsheet, is look at your base and put in your weekly spend or your fixed bills and don't put anything else in. Don't put gifts, holidays, clothes, Christmas or any other type of savings. You're looking at me like you're going to counter this, and that's awesome. And then what I would be doing is, if I've worked out that my base every single week is $1,000, that comes in the door, that just runs into the Glen James Spending Plan. And then anything above that $1,000, one week it might be $1,200, the next week it might be $1,500, one week it might be $1,001, anything above that amount I would be carving off at the discretion of the pay cycle each week or each pay cycle. So I've budgeted on the base. Okay, there's $1,200 instead of $1,000. So that extra $200, maybe you can go, okay, every time I get above this base, I'm breaking it up 30%. 30% into long-term savings, 30% into gifts, clothes, holidays, Christmas, 33% into investing. Alternatively, if it always is irregular, get a pen and paper out, spreadsheet or whatever, and look at your budget and maybe set up three bank accounts. I'm just making this up on the fly. Weekly spend, bills account, savings, and then look at the percentages of each based on the expenses. You know, 30% of my waking up costs is for food, fuel, entertainment, going out. Every time I get paid, I just put 30% in that account. Every time I get paid, I put 50% in that account. The underlying thing here is you just need a system that works for you, and you need to be more automated and structured if you're wild and loose like me. What would you say to that? Because you look to me like, where is he going with this?
I think where so I agree with a lot of the things that you said. Where I sort of have a different opinion, where I have a different opinion is around that base. And I guess it depends how much fat you've got in that base, because I have seen a lot of people, you know, having a lot of their goals only achieved by way of, say, bonuses or windfalls, etc. And then, of course, lo and behold, something might happen and there's no bonus. A bonus is just that, and that's how I've always wanted people to think of it. And so I like to think, if we can, and again, it depends on your situation, let's make sure that your financial goals still have some capacity to be achieved from your base if you can. And then anything that's a bonus is just that. And to your point, what I like to do is almost think of it like a bit of a pie graph and have different percentages. And so it's easy for our brain to be like, cool, anytime there's extra, that $200 that you said was extra, 10% goes to fund money and 15% goes to, you know, allocate them towards the goals and have those set percentages. It just means that if you don't get that extra shift, or if you don't get that bonus or comm or whatever it is, you're not like, oh my God, all my goals are down the toilet.
But it's not only that, it's the goals, yes, but, and it goes back to what type of irregular income in it, and I can give you a couple of examples, everyone, but you don't want to be like, I can't go out and get a big shop of groceries this week for $200 because I'm on 10% salary and 90% bonus that comes in irregularly. Yeah. So it is almost that you need a system that keeps the BAU, behavioral analysis unit, Criminal Minds. I'm back because I'm watching that at the moment on Disney Plus. Love it every night. Criminal Minds, come at me. So BAU, business as usual. Mm. And then what you do with the bonus, the irregular income. Now, strictly speaking, when people say whose income can vary week to week, for me that could be casual work.
Mm, yeah, I'd agree with that.
Where a bonus structure, we know that it might appear quarterly.
They just said base, and I'm used to hearing the word base. True. And then you talk about comms and bonuses and all the things.
Which is, okay, so that's interesting because, yeah, on top of your base, unless it's, because it, back to what I was thinking, Jess, it's either you're a real estate agent and you might be just getting started in your career and you get the minimum wage. Mm. Like you might get 50 grand a year. At the end of the year, your salary will be 110, but that is going to be lumpy. Yeah. But for it to vary week on week and you've got a base, there must be some sales portion that they can quantify and pay each week. I don't know, like... Either way, we both agree that you do need a system, but the trap, I reckon, Jess, is if you don't have a system, you'll look back and it's like, oh, wow, I earned 90 grand this year and it came in different sloppy ways and I've got nothing to prove for it because I haven't had a system. I'm just like, live like a king one week, don't live like a king the next week. And
yeah. I see this a bit with small business owners. Yes. You know, you have a really good quarter and you're like feasting and then you forget about the seasonality of your business and then you're famining. And so, you know, if you run a small business or if you know that there's seasonality to your income, like think about it over the year and don't just be the ball, you know, you with all your bougie spends the second that you've got extra money coming in. I see people do that all the time. And then, yeah, you're right. They look at their income for the year and they're like, well, where the hell did all of that go?
So it is some type of system and it would vary depending of whether it's I get paid $1,000, then the next week 11, the next week 12, the next week 1,000, the next week 900, or here's $1,800 a fortnight and every quarter there's 10 grand that drops in my lap.
Mm. Completely agree. Mm. I think it's a really common question though. And I also think just back to that like portioning out, you can do it however you want. I reckon you've got to have a portion in there that's allocated for fun. Because I think particularly if it's commission or bonus based and if you're using that money to invest for like longer term stuff, if you're working your butt off to get a quarterly commission or whatever it is and not any of that's allocated to fun, you're probably going to break your rule. But I think it gives you that little motivation. And so I have found particularly with people that are, you know, chasing targets, et cetera, to have an allocation to be like, cool, like what's the number? And that's the number you've got to figure out. It gets them excited, but it doesn't mean that they're going to break the bank and spend everything.
And this is funny. I'm like, I'll throw this question in. We'll talk about it for 2 minutes first and then. But no, it's good because the more I think about this, the more I don't have an answer.
We are
but
experts.
I'm like, and it goes back to what's your personality. If you are a considered saver and you're good with money and $1,000 in your account or your wallet doesn't burn a hole in your pocket like it does with me. Mm. Like it's just this, well, I've got this $1,000 and must be spent. Like I must buy stuff. Could you do some type of system, like back to the Glenn James spending plan, where you work out your weekly costs? So fuel, food, going out, entertainment, groceries, netball of a night or indoor soccer that you pay $10 Yeah, just that weekly cost, okay? Have one cash hub account that covers all your bills throughout the year and you get paid into that automatic payment to the weekly spend account and you just make it that, okay, this is the cash hub account. There's always a float of $5,000 to $8,000 in there. So when I get the lumpy income goes into that account, if 1 week it's up to 11 and then it goes to 12, all right, it's been stable at $12,000 for the week. I always want an $8,000 float. Mm. Okay, I can commit that $4,000 to investing or say, I don't know.
There's no one way.
No.
And again, depends how seasonalized your income is. And so think about that as well. But yeah, I think having some level of separation, particularly for people who sound like you, Glenn, it does become really important because you have to put in safeguards.
Yep.
And we need a structure and a system that is going to be helpful so we can get out of our own way. I like talking about that a lot.
And also, I did this reel the other day. I was thinking, if you just salary sacrifice to super each week, call it $100 a week, $150 a week if you got the spare money, $50 a week, whatever that is, right? You did not have or go into any consumer debt, and whether you've got a mortgage or not, if you just were so sloppy and spent money when it came in and you made sure all your bills were paid, each year you're categorically living on less than what you earn anyway. So it almost gets to the point where it doesn't matter if my day on day, week on week is sloppy because I'm automatically investing.
Into super.
Yeah, or insert an investment account here. So if you automate that big rock and then live in chaos each year, provided you're staying out of credit cards, Afterpay, buy now, pay later, or consumer debt, it gets to the point, well, it doesn't matter if it's heaps sloppy. You might not be as targeted with your meeting your goals, but at least you protected yourself if you don't heaps care.
And you've done something.
Yeah.
Mm. I think that that's a good point. I also just, like, I like freedom within boundaries. Like, I'm not someone who's you can only have one coffee a day. I'm like, if I need another coffee, I'm having another coffee. And so, you know, to your point before, I have for years had the weekly spend account that I allocate money to myself on a Wednesday, and I can spend it on whatever I like, and I need that level of flexibility. I'm not a highly rigid person, and I don't want to sift through bank accounts and figure out how much did I spend on coffee last month. Yeah, that doesn't interest me. What interests me is being like, okay, cool, Jess, you've got this money for the week. What's coming up? How are you going to deploy it in line with your values?
Yep. Simple as that. Cool. There you go. Haven't answered anything, Grace, but hey, we had a good chat. This is a question. I'll throw it to you, Jess, given that you're the only one over there that I'm throwing it to.
Please.
It's a bit of a longer question, but I'll read it out. Hi, everyone. Looking for advice on paying off mortgage versus enjoying money. I'm 27 and bought my first home a year ago. I'm living in it and renting rooms to two friends to help cover the mortgage costs. Beck, you are crushing it.
Agree.
Love that. I'm just paying the compulsory minimum principal and interest repayments against my mortgage. Accounting for the rental income I receive from my tenants, the mortgage costs is about 25% of my monthly income. Okay, cool. So you'd almost assume that it could be up to 40-ish if she was living there herself, maybe.
Maybe.
We don't know. It's irrelevant. She continues, I'd say I'm financially conscious, but definitely not on a strict budget. I often eat out at restaurants, buy new clothes, go on weekend trips away. So I'm spending a fair bit, but also able to put some money towards savings. To date, my 20s have been coloured with travel, and this is something I want to continue. All right, we'll just do that. Next question. My question is, am I hindering my financial position greatly by choosing only to repay the minimum and then, you know, other than all the compulsory expenses and bills and emergency fund and all that, treating all additional income as fun money? At this rate, it feels I'll never pay this house off, but at the same time, it feels like time to enjoy the fun money I have and travel. Any advice or thoughts would be greatly appreciated. Lots of comments in the group. Let's chew on this one. What are you saying to Beck if she dialed into the Financially Fierce podcast? She loved your podcast. She slid into your DM and wrote this question to you. What would you say to Beck?
I'd say what you said, like, this is exciting. Well done, Beck. This is so phenomenal that someone who's 27, so you're obviously, I'd imagine, 26 when you bought the property and you've got people in there to help you cover some of the costs, because to your point, you know, maybe without that, you would be finding yourself in what we consider housing stress, which is typically any time you're spending more than 30% of your income.
Which is basically every Aussie.
Which is basically everyone right now.
Yeah, that's wild.
Interest rates and housing crisis. Yeah. I think it's always this beautiful tension point of, you know, living for the now and saving for the later. And there is no perfect answer other than finding the bit that, you know, is in the middle where we are still able to have fun, but not at the expense of future us. Mm. And so I think we've got to do this beautiful dance of, okay, what am I prepared to trade off and what am I not? And it's like, at what cost? Mm. So if I'm prepared, you know, if my biggest goal is to be mortgage free by a certain time, then you might be prepared to give up travel and you might never want to buy new clothes or eat out or have, you know, fun times and go away, whatever. That might be perfectly fine for you, but it's not for Beck. She's made it very clear that it's not. And so, Beck, you're going to have to sit down and figure out, okay, what am I comfortable and what am I not comfortable with? And is there an opportunity to have a similar experience but rein in the cost slightly so that I'm still doing the fun thing and I'm able to perhaps, I don't know whether you've got an offset account, but if you've got one, park some funds in an offset account that reduces the interest that you pay so that over time, yeah, you are able to, you know, pay less interest and or pay the mortgage down earlier. The great news is if you stay in that house and you just keep paying the minimums based on your age, you're going to retire, assuming everything pans out, pre-retirement with a home with no debt on it. Obviously, life twists and turns and we don't know what that will look like. But minimum repayments, you know, it's pretty astronomical what you'll see in terms of how much you pay in total interest over that period. Mm. And you've got to remember if you're living in it, it's not deductible. Mm. So I would say to you, Beck, think about whether there's any trade-offs you can make so you can have the same level of fun and potentially put some of that money away so you are not foregoing one for the other. Do you want some numbers?
Yeah.
Just basic numbers. I don't know how much her mortgage is and all the things.
Well, she's Australian, so it's clearly $18 million.
Well, I've not gone for that high. Oh. And thinking about it logically, given she's got friends living in it, this might be too low. But let me just run with some numbers. You'll get the general gist and idea. Mm. Assuming a $500,000 mortgage at a 6.18% interest rate for 30 years, if you just did the minimum mortgage repayments and let's say you never have an interest rate change for 30 years, which is probably unlikely, you're actually going to pay back 1.103 mil in total. Mm. It's a lot of interest to pay. If instead you are able to make additional repayments, so let's say you were able to add an additional $500 a month, so about $125 a week, which may or may not work for your budget, I don't know, guessing, that brings the mortgage term down from 30 years to 20 years and 11 months. That's nearly a decade sooner that they'd be debt-free. Mm-hmm. And the total repayments are around $894,000 as opposed to that 1.1. But I think actually it's the 9 and a bit years of no mortgage repayments that sounds most exciting to me.
Yeah, and I, for me, this type of question, it is more, it's similar to what I said before, like if you just do something extra automated, whether that is paying down extra on the mortgage, investing, salary sacrifice, super, yeah, go and have fun if you keep out of debt.
Yeah, I'm never an advocate for like tuna and rice forever. And like the reality is, people don't make it to retirement age and then some people outlive their money. Like it's this awful confusing mix.
But if Beck, like we'll assume like the average listener of this podcast is like 31, 32 years old, earning $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So if Beck was our average listener earning $100,000, because she would have had to service this mortgage by herself, mm-hmm. provided we don't know if there's parental guarantee in the background, we don't know if there's inheritance, so there's heaps of stuff we don't know, but conceptually, we'll assume that she's on a decent income. The first thing I'm doing, Beck, keeping the mortgage on a minimum, and you've said you got a small emergency fund. Let's get that emergency fund up to the $15,000, whatever that is for you. Then this is so crazy. Do your numbers, do the Glenn James spending plan, work out how much you've actually got left at the end of each pay cycle, the end of each month. Then you can say, I'm a responsible adult, so if I've got $500 a month left over, I'm putting half of it into super long term. I'm putting half down on the mortgage. The other half I'm putting to my travel fund.
There's lots of halves in your example, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. The first half was either or.
All right.
There's three halves in this equation. So I think like it gets to the point, it's like, okay, well, if you got 20 grand or 30 grand left over each year and you're drinking it up the wall, I mean, you do you if you keep out of debt, but that's not honoring your future you. And that's what we say, eye on today, eye on the future.
Yeah. And also what I'm liking now is that many banks are offering multiple offset account features. And so it's really easy to set them up and name them different things. And so you can almost test it for a little bit of time and make sure you've got it right. Because of course, everyone's had bill shock if you've had a mortgage over the last little while. You also want to be able to withstand any interest rate changes. Hopefully they don't keep going up, but you've got to be kind of prepared for them. So yeah, to your point around building the emergency fund, maybe we want it to go from small to medium.
Yeah. And it's all about having confidence and structure. So yesterday, I sat down with a widow who lost her husband at the end of last year, 30-year-old couple.
Shit.
One-year-old child.
Oh, my God.
And we spent 2 hours and I went through her budget now. And kids out there, please get life insurance. I was sitting down with a widow yesterday. Her husband died less than 3 months ago. Guess who's back to work already?
Because there's no life insurance.
No.
Oh, my God.
And it breaks my heart. And so, like, I say this stuff on the podcast, like, get life insurance. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, no, but really. So what we did, and she had some money from GoFundMe, which is awesome. Some family members are contributing to help. And one of the things was, like, hey, you need to ask them at some point. Is this for 6 months, 6 years, till the child's out of, like, but all that to say, regardless of your financial situation, she had, and because there's a mortgage and they've got a house, multiple offset accounts. And one of the offset accounts, we did the budget up, emergency fund there, gifts, clothes, holidays, Christmas, and then we did just the savings account. And I said, we can leave here today with so much confidence that you need to know that money there in the savings account is not spoken for. It's literally your savings. And you can do whatever you want with that with confidence. Now, there is wisdom there, right? She's not going to go and book a 20 grand trip around the world, but Beck needs to really do her numbers, and she may have, so she knows this is how much I've got left over in my life that isn't allocated to future bills, emergency fund, or whatever. Then you can walk into, okay, I've got 10 grand here in my savings.
Because not knowing chews up so much mental load, whether you realize it or not. You're subconsciously stressing about, like, where is this going to land me? Am I doing the right thing? Have I got enough? And to your point, you want that certainty and the clarity and the confidence that you can spend money that's allocated to X because you've done your numbers and you're like, shit, I can actually spend this and enjoy it because I know that if I do all these other things properly, I'm going to land here. I think that's really exciting.
And that's what I said to her. I'm like, the good thing is, like, I feel so comfortable that all the income that's going in, less your mortgage repayments, less your expenses, daycare, all that stuff, you've got X amount left over each year. And as a young widow with a mortgage and a child, I said, I feel very comfortable. And that means that we don't have to even think about selling the house and downsize. Like, and it just provides having your numbers worked out. Again, you can live in chaos and do all that stuff that I said and you'll make it to the end. It won't be as efficient, but at least you're not going backwards if you're automating your savings and not tracking your spending. But having those numbers back, it will just give you so much confidence to say, money I've got left over, I'm saving half for holidays. Or you work back the other way, right? And you say, because she loves to travel, I want to do 2 international trips a year. I need 10 grand for that. And then work backwards and go, okay, ask me what I had for dinner last night, Jess.
What did you have for dinner last
night? Bowl of Just Right.
You did not.
No, I did. Always do. Love it. And then Beck can make the call to get to that 10 grand target, whether she wants to eat Just Right every night or not.
I haven't thought about Just Right in about 20 years, and I wonder if this is now sponsored by Just Right, because now all I can think about is Just Right.
It's really nice.
Oh, gosh. Mm. But you're 100% right. Then we just get the option to decide what trade-offs we're comfortable and not comfortable making.
All our personal finance and spending, everything to do with your life when it comes to your money is a trade-off.
Agree.
And it's what do you want more than the other thing? So I'll give you an example. One of the reasons why I may have had Just Right for dinner last night, because I didn't do my weekly shop last week. So my pantry was empty. Do you know, like, you go through sad times and you have comfort food and stuff?
Mm.
Last week, every single night and lunch and breakfast, I ate out.
Is that your comfort food, just eating out as a category?
Yeah, I was like, I can't be bothered cooking. It's too stressful. I'm sad. It was like literally over $90 a day.
Oh, wow. I had the complete opposite week, so I haven't been well. And so I've made a kilo of bolognese. I don't know who I thought I was feeding.
Yeah.
I
brought some for me.
No, I can't, because I've finished it, because all I've been eating is bolognese. Bolognese on toast, bolognese on pasta. Like, I don't have a Jaffel maker. That's aspirational. Mm. I need to get one. But I'm like, I don't need to see freaking bolognese again for such a long time, because I mean, I got so much mileage out of a kilo's worth of meat. So we've had very different weeks, but now all I just want is Just Right.
But the thing is, you're like, the reason I shared my example, because I've made my bed that I'm laying in to say the trade-off for me, if I have a week of eating out and being lazy and spending $27 for a meal at a pub or down at the wharf or whatever, I'm okay, because it's a bit, weekly spend account got to be slammed. So I'm like, yesterday was Monday, was it? Whatever.
Tuesday,
whatever. Mm. I'm like, haven't been grocery shopping because I didn't have the money on the weekend to go because my account was empty.
Mm.
So by me being totally ridiculous and spending all that money on food, it wasn't I got that money out of savings, because I've got my system, and that was the trade-off that I decided to make.
Absolutely. And I pay myself on a Wednesday, and I've had times where friends have invited me out on a Tuesday. I'm like, listen here, sunshine, I have $8. Yeah, so if you want to see me, we've got to make this work. And you're right. It's because I don't want to rob my goals.
Yep.
They're too important to me. And you get creative and you go to Aldi and you're like, what can I actually get for this? Turns out not much anymore. Mm. But, you know, you have to be okay with almost the gamification of that model. And, you chose your choice.
Yep. I lay in the bed I make for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying, Beck. I think absolutely get out of here, go on holidays, but make sure your numbers are in tow, make sure your emergency fund is set up. You may even do the, I was just thinking as well, whatever rent you're getting, you may even run your life that they pay, and it kind of all comes out in the wash, but I'm just thinking like the psychology of it, whatever they pay goes on the mortgage as an additional payment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
If you can. Cool.
So, sounds like you've done well. You've got into that first home, but yeah, love it. Go get it. She is financially conscious, but not on a strict budget. Okay. I'm probably the same. Although I've got a spending plan, which is forward looking. I think budgets are looking back. It's like, I spent this. So, for example, I'm at TAFE at the moment.
I saw your assignment.
Yeah, I was doing an assignment when Jess walked in. Budgets, for example, they look at what you've spent and then they reallocate it. So, for example, they were upgrading the air conditioning in this building that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
I call Newcastle TAFE Shutter Island. If you've seen the movie, I think
I think they
shot it there. Looks like a asylum.
Jail.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they were only replacing existing air conditioner units, but the room we were in didn't have an air conditioner ever, so there's no money to replace the one that's not there.
Mm.
So with budgets, I think it's restrictive based on past performance, where a spending plan is an allocation of, I've got this amount of money to spend freedom within boundaries, like you said.
Hmm.
Okay, we're going to have a break because we've been chin-wagging away, and then we'll come back. We might answer one more question or whatever, and then I might talk to Jess about her own money life and all that. We'll be back right after this.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, welcome back. Community segment of the week. We asked you in the Facebook group, This Is Money, if you're in a relationship, how do you sort out money stuff and who manages what? This segment is brought to you by Sky Wealth. They've helped hundreds of listeners really get on top of their life insurance, their income insurance. As I said, I've just had an actual practical experience of a situation where there wasn't any life insurance. And it's the difference between having no mortgage and focusing on being a full-time parent versus having a mortgage and having to go back to work 3 to 4 days a week. Please, everyone. You know, Sky Wealth, they're part of this podcast and network. If you use them, we are looked after. It's an ecosystem. They're supporters of the show. If you're skeptical, you've got a tin hat, whatever, I don't care. Go to someone else. I know they'll look after you and won't screw you, but if you're skeptical of me and conflicts, I don't care. Just get your life insurance and income insurance. All right, how do you sort out money stuff and who manages what?
Cool. Alexander said, a constant conversation. I reject the who is best in inverted commas. Having worked as a broker for a long time, I've sat across the table from countless people who say, oh, I manage the money. They wouldn't know the first thing in inverted commas. This terrifies me. He says, I know how money works practically, but this doesn't make me good at it. I'm efficient at working through insurance, banking, and all that jazz. But my wife is way more conservative and spends less than I do. So I constantly seek to bring her back into the conversation and try not to let my frustration disengage her so we can make financial decisions together. 10 years on, and she's pretty clued in, and I'm excited because I think she's going to do a lot more of the investment research moving forward. That sounds like a really cool partnership.
Totally. Do you want a partnership like that?
Yeah, I've also sat across from people where they're like, oh, they're better at it, so they manage it. Or someone says, you know, I enjoy it more. And you can't do that. There's too much going on and it's unfair. It's unfair to the person who feels locked out and then doesn't understand what's going on. And it's unfair to the person that you'd put all of the labor on.
Well, Sarah says an interesting one here. The same way we figure out all other chores we have to do, who is better at it, who likes it more or who hates it the least. There was a lot of likes to that comment and love hearts. I would probably say just from a pragmatic thing, let's pick lawn mowing and let's pick unpacking the dishwasher as two household chores. And then let's tick budgeting and money, right? So there's three things. You have a responsibility if you live in that household to know how to do each one of those things, to know how to open that dishwasher, how to empty it. Just as a responsibility, you should know how to do that. Mm. You might not love it, but when it needs to be done, you do it.
Yeah.
The budgeting, the money stuff, I hypothesize that you might not be in the weeds and the spreadsheet and optimizing, but you need to be involved in decision making in terms of big picture decisions, big picture strategy, goals, and understand where everything is.
Agree.
And it's not saying that you're in the weeds, but if your partner died, you're not going to be left going, oh, what's what? How do I do this?
And to the partner that, you know, let's take your analogy, to the partner that normally stacks the dishwasher, like they're not going to stack the dishwasher the way that you always want it. Mm. And so they might do things slightly differently as they start to come in and learn more about budgeting, you have to also be flexible and adapt and be like, well, this is how I've run it for a long time, but I'm keen for input and yeah, I've got a little system that we use, but I'm happy to be adaptive to change. You know, there's nothing more infuriating than people who restack the dishwasher the way people like it. It's the same with budgets. You've got to be adaptable and flexible as someone's coming in.
And the same thing, like if one person loved doing the lawns more than the other person, that's fine. That person was in hospital for 3 weeks and the lawns needed to be mowed. You need to know how to go out, pull the cord and mow the lawn.
Yeah. I mean, I lived in an environment where my mother mowed the lawn and my father cooked every day.
Yeah.
And like we were screwed when he couldn't cook because she's shocking at it. Mm. She did try, bless her. But like you should have some basic skills so that you don't accidentally almost kill your children the few times where you have to cook. I think it's similar with money.
What did Liz say?
Liz says, I manage it all, but my husband and I frequently discuss the budget and any financial decisions prior to acting on them. We have joint accounts across the board, so we have 100% transparency.
Yeah, that's sweet. Mark, I told my partner to quit her job since she moved in and I've been paying all our bills, rent, her clothes and everything you can think of. Why? Because she takes care of the kids and does everything you can think of to make sure our house and children are taken care of. Okay. Mark told her, but I'm sure, I would hope she was happy to be a full-time mum and attend to the house.
Yeah. I mean, I think also then it becomes like it's not someone's income. It's a household
exactly.
income.
Exactly, yeah.
Because, you know, one person's doing paid work and someone sounds like they're doing
unpaid work.
Yeah.
And that's the fallacy. If the unpaid work wasn't getting done, it's got to get done somehow.
You got to pay for it.
Yeah. Or use your own time after hours, which can make more life stress and blah, blah, blah.
Melanie says, I'm the one who follows this page, so I'm the one that manages the finances. And then has that emoji with like the cool kid
sunnies.
With
the sunnies
on.
Jillian. We have a joint account for all bills, rent, groceries, and each contribute half of the required amounts, 50-50. And she's talking like this when she types. Oh. Nah. The rest of our salary remains our own each. Okay, so basically cost to live and contribute to the house is X amount. We put it in 50-50. The rest, take your money, get back to camp. We share the responsibility and have consistent chats around money, our money goals, looking at our individual and combined budgets and making sure we're aligned. In saying that, he usually takes care of organising / tracking utility bills and rent, and I take care of groceries, all from the joint account. It's what we've naturally settled in and we're both pretty happy. So whatever works, as long as you communicate and, you know, someone isn't just a passenger.
No passengers, and I would always say everyone needs to have one bank account of their own with some cash in for emergency situations that the other partner cannot access.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it. Like I know how to drive a car and sometimes I'm a passenger in other people's cars.
Yeah.
So weird. Rightio, thank you Sky Wealth for helping us with the community segment of the week. Just some housekeeping. The property book tour. It's all happening now. SortYourPropertyOut.com/tour. And the book, if you want to get a property, get the book. John crushed it. $24, $25. You might learn something that might save you 50 to 100 to 150 grand. That's a good deal. It's awesome. And the book club this month in March, we're actually reading Sort Your Property Out and Build Your Future by John Pidgeon. So grab the book. Let's all read it in March. And we can talk about it in the Facebook group after that. That's all the housekeeping this week. Looking forward to seeing you, whether you're attending the live show in Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, or Perth. And yeah, can't wait to see you. All right. There's a question that came up in the group, and we'll keep her anonymous because half of this, I will have a bit of fun. Half of it, it's good to chat about.
Mm.
Hey, I'm posting on behalf of my brother and would love some advice. And this is what the brother said. I'm 28 years old who is still living with parents. So gratefully, no big bills / mortgage or rent I have to pay. It's just wild. The job I'm working at hasn't been great on my mental health lately and I'm feeling a lot of dread, anxiety and depression about going to work each day as the work culture has turned toxic. And that's valid, that happens. Mm. I have had the opportunity to start an easy job while I study full-time IT online. However, it's about 10 grand less. I'm struggling to make my mind up, so I'd love some input. Here's my financial situation. I own two cars, one of which is financed for $38,000. I'm not selling the car. It's a passion of mine. Loan is with Wiser at 11% interest, and the repayments are $900.50 a month. The other car will be selling for $25,000, which should pay out a chunk of the loan. He's got $5,000 on Zip Money for flights to a trip to Scotland in September. Also need, you know, $300 a month for spending money over there. 246 fortnightly for my IT course. How long's the fortnightly course go for? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 minutes? $400 monthly bills for phone, gym, car insurance, health insurance. I own a small amount of assets worth around $5,000 and have other car bits to sell worth about $3,000. Current pay is $4,400 per month after tax, and the new job will be $3,800. Then I'll get a bit more after probation, but I'll still be earning a little bit less. Also keep in mind, both jobs are temporary as I plan on working my way up the IT ladder next year or so. What would you do in my situation? Appreciate any opinions as I'm struggling making my mind up. Hashtag careers.
You've had long questions today to answer. Do you want me to go on this one first?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot to say about this.
Oh, you go.
No, you. I want to hear what you want to say.
As much as I'm a financial advisor, if you are dreading the idea of going to work and you trade off so much of your life to go to work, I think if it's a genuine mental health issue and you feel like you are not psychologically safe in that space, you need to leave. And it's good to have some roadway. And of course, you know, you'd love to find another job before you leave, but sometimes you can't. And that's why we have emergency funds to get us out of emergency situations. And I'd say if your mental health is taking a battling.
Yeah. A pounding even, whatever. Yeah,
whatever. If your mental health is, you know, becoming severe as a result of this, then I think you can't be deciding whether you're staying or going. It's like, well, where am I going? That's what I would be deciding. The other thing that I want to say, and I feel like you're going to go this way, so I won't spend a lot of time on it, is my friend, you're in a very privileged position to have no big bills, no mortgage, and you're on not a bad income, but your asset and liability position is not where I would expect it to be for someone that doesn't pay rent. And I think we've got to have hard conversations about, should we be going and getting loans for cars? I think if you interview me soon, you'll know I have a very strong thought on that. And we've got to be realistic and open to all options, because again, we're back to these trade-offs conversations. You can probably sell one, it sounds like, and reduce the debt pretty considerably on the other. I don't think anyone should go into debt for an asset that depreciates in value. That's what I believe.
There was comments in there that, oh, it could go up in value, it's a special car and blah, blah, blah. All the usual emotional justifications.
Sure. I mean, there might be. I don't know the foggiest thing about cars, but maybe, but probably not. But I think we have an opportunity. Like, you're young, my friend. You are going to potentially rust on some habits around, like, figuring stuff out later, like buying cars. It's a passion. I want to justify it. I'm going to Scotland. I'll buy it now and figure it out later. We need to turn that from, you know, having to have future you solve yesterday's problems to actually being able to save for them now and then, you know, do it after. And there is no better time to be in that position than when you've got no big bills and mortgages. So I think it's time for some rapid change and some tough chats with yourself about how you got here, being really vulnerable and honest, and what big calls are you going to make so that we're not back paying stuff from past decisions and we're forward planning.
I'm going to say stuff here that isn't a direct target to old mate. Mm-hmm. It's more a comment about society and those who might be not financially woke, not listening to this podcast for 3 years and not aware of what's happening. Mm. So he said, what would you do in my situation? Well, again, if the mental health stuff is that bad, go to the GP tomorrow, get a mental health plan. There could be some coping mechanisms with talk therapy or whatever to get you through it. But conversely, your life would be less stressful if you didn't have all these repayments and debt.
Mm-hmm.
And that could mean that you might feel that you can just quit work sooner. I mean, the car is like two cars worth well over half his annual income. Way too much car. Mm. This is ridiculous. I don't care if it's a passion of yours. I don't care if the sun shines out of the exhaust pipe's ass. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't actually have the money. You can't afford this. And I've seen this all the time over my career, right? You're living at home at 28, not paying rent or bills. My friend, you're living a false economy. And then you believe the lie that I can afford something if I can pay it weekly.
Mm.
I can afford it weekly doesn't mean I can afford it. So one of the comments in the group, the author, she said, oh, he's really good with money. He's got savings. Like, no, he's not good with money. I'm sorry. Like, if you're good with money, and this is the reality check and the hard truths that people in this situation need to hear. You're horrendous at managing money. And I'm again, it's not, I'm making entertainment and I'm not being directly harsh, because this is the frog in the working class society pot that gets a job, stays at home not paying rent and bills. I can afford $100 a week. I can afford $200 a week for this loan. Next minute turnaround, my life's a mess. I'm sad. I'm depressed. I need a new job. What do I do?
Or the next shiny thing.
Yeah. So what would I do? I would literally sell every car, pay off all the debt. I don't give a crap. I love cars. I do. I want them. I'm always looking on marketplace for cars. I currently own 3 cars. Like, I love cars, but I don't do it with debt.
Agree. Hey, did I tell you I just bought a car?
Oh, what'd you get?
Oh my God, I bought a car. I don't care about cars at all. I haven't had a car for years.
Yeah, because when you said you're out the front parking, I thought to myself, oh,
she doesn't have a car. She does now. Bought a $2,000 car. Cha-ching!
What?
And it's a convertible.
Oh my gosh. What is it, a freaking 87 Beamer?
No, it's a, God, you're going to test me. It's a 2004 Peugeot 207. Is that a thing?
It's a great liability that you've got there.
Yeah. Well, it's $2,000. It's literally just got to get me and the dog to the dog park and like some sporadic trips to Aldi.
Next service, you'll be spending more than $2,000.
Do you reckon?
Oh, 100%.
More than $2,000 on a service.
Okay. If that thing needs new brakes or suspension or anything, I got my car, I got new brakes put on the front of my car yesterday, like literally yesterday.
Okay. You're an expert. Yeah. Tell me.
$950, discs and pads. Anyway.
I did the numbers and I am a loyal member of GoGet, but I just, but yes, I don't give a crap about cars, but just looking, this is not an emotional play. This is, you are needing to really adult here. You're going to have to make some tough calls. You can do a bit of a reset and then set some amazing goals and buy cars, I think, with cash.
Totally. I mean, we're not borrowing money to go on a friggin' holiday to Scotland or to Scotland. We're not doing it. We are saving cash. You don't pay rent. You're 28 years old. You've got a full-time job.
Yeah.
Pay off your friggin' debt, sell the cars, cancel Scotland. I don't care. Also, do what you want. This is ridiculous. Just because you can afford the repayment doesn't mean you can afford it.
Agree.
Would appreciate any opinions as I'm struggling making my mind up. You're only struggling making your mind up because your life's a financial mess.
I mean, it's a financial mess by the sounds of it, but it's also it sounds like the workplace is a mess, and you culminate those two things together.
Exactly.
That can be really stressful.
Exactly.
And to your point, you pay some of these debts down, my friend. You don't need to necessarily really labor over this decision because the income's less. It becomes a no-brainer because you're like, well, I've ripped out $950 bucks a month worth of costs because the car loan's gone. And so I'd rather take a job that gives me more career fulfillment or is just a happier, nicer place to be. And I'll trade that off for a little bit until I get myself onto the IT ladder and bombs away.
100%. And you do this right, mate. You can buy any car you want without the stress.
Agree.
What colour's your Peugeot? Blue?
Red.
Red. Oh, it's fast.
I know, I'm fast now. I got red hair. It's important.
So why? Okay, just, why the Peugeot? Like, because for me,
it was on a whim.
Okay, because you know that a $2,000 car is actually basically a $0 car. Like, you basically didn't pay for the car because $1,000 of it is insurance, like Regio and Greenslip.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you really can't get a cheaper car than like $1,000 or $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
So you're aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and no shame.
Oh, yeah, I know nothing about cars. I'm happy to be schooled on this.
But, like, what was the rationale? Like, an old car worth $2,000 might not pass rego.
Oh, okay. There was logic.
You like, I'm just going to use this for the next 3 months and
drive it. It's got like 6 or 7 months. Yeah, it's got 6 or 7 months worth of rego left.
Yes.
It's done 85,000 Ks.
Oh, okay. So it's done no Ks.
It's done nothing.
Okay.
It literally went from, I don't know, like two suburbs away to this lady used it to get to and from work. She worked two suburbs from where she lived.
Yeah, okay. It's still a boy in terms of case.
So, yeah, it's done nothing. It's got rego until, I don't know, 6 or 7 months away. I had done my numbers, and because I've been traveling a lot more than normal, I was like, okay, I just need a little run around. And I basically said, if it gets me to the next rego, is the cost-benefit analysis enough?
Perfect, perfect.
And is it going to work until the next rego?
Perfect. It's a disposable car for you.
Correct.
Yep.
And the money trade-off, the, you know, that sunk of, I don't know, it ended up being two or two, three when you do the transfer amount and what have you. And the insurance. The insurance was nothing, by the way. It was a couple hundred bucks.
Well, it would only be third party.
Only third party. Yep. I'm not is that going to be less than what I was paying in Ubers and Go-Gets, et cetera? And, I filled the tank up the other day. It costs less than $50 because it's got the tiniest petrol thing in the whole world. Last week's.
Wow. Yeah, okay. I mean.
Stay tuned. I don't know how she'll go. I've named her Lady, so we'll see how Lady goes.
Yeah. Well, it's fun at least.
Yeah, it's scary being in a little convertible.
But like why, so you haven't had a car previous, like cause does your place where you're living have a car hold?
No, I have to get a permit.
Yeah, so at least you there's no real point you spending heaps and heaps of money when it's parked on the street in Surry Hills.
Yeah,
because it's going to get shat on, sapped on by the trees, dinged.
Yeah, look, I didn't. It was sort of a. It was only a recent thing that became a conversation, just because of how much I was spending in Ubers and Go-Gets, just because of some stuff changing in me.
Yeah.
Needing a car to get to and from places.
Where?
I'm not telling you all my whereabouts. Jesus, you've already revealed enough about me. And I feel like if you see a red car in my suburb, please don't do anything bad to it.
So what do you, like, what is money to you?
Money is choice and freedom and security to me.
Mm. How long did it take you to resolve that kind of definition in your heart and life and mind?
How deep do you want me to go?
I don't know.
So, look, I had a pretty rough childhood and we didn't have very much money and there were some complications, as a lot of families have. And, I remember saying to my auntie and uncle and maybe even my grandparents from, like, definitely before 10, because, when you think about different periods and you know where you lived at certain points, definitely before 10 that, like, I wanted to have my own apartment. And it was very important to me I had this vision of this apartment, which I can still see, which is hilarious. And that it was very important for me that everyone came over and, saw my house. I saw that as some sort of status and success marker from like under 10. So I think when you grow up, my parents were on the, or my mum and my stepfather, who I call dad, they were on the social housing wait list. We didn't get one, but, we had nothing. And so I think when you see environments where your parents literally fight over their last $20. It does create, a level of heightened awareness around particularly the security piece for me. Mm. In terms of choice, I don't know if I picked that up before I was 10, but, I've watched so many people and I've given advice to so many people, and choice is a luxury. Mm. And without financial resources, you don't get as much choice.
What do you reckon the best thing is that you've ever done for yourself with money?
Saved to start businesses.
Really?
Yeah, because it's given me freedom and autonomy in my life. And by having successful businesses that I've started and scaled and, I sold one, that enabled me to do a whole heap of other cool stuff. I bought a house. I took 3 months off and kumbaya'd around Europe. I had a house deposit that I used to start my first business. But it changed the course of my life. And so that was a huge risk and a gamble, but it was a big investment in me.
Mm. What is your definition of success?
It's very different to when you would have asked me to define success 10 years ago.
Do you say how old you are publicly?
Yeah, I couldn't give a shit.
How old are you, like 27?
You're 33. An idiot. You know I'm not 27. I just last a couple of weeks ago from a hospital bed, how annoying, turned 36. Aging is a privilege.
Yeah.
And
it's just some people get weird about it. That's why.
Fine.
Yeah.
No, I'm totally cool with it. Yeah, so I just turned 36.
Yeah, cool. So you really, I don't know, I reckon the older I get, the more I will, like, you think, oh, by the time I'm 35, I'll have everything together.
Oh, we were just talking about this.
I'm now, like, knocking on 40's door. I'm like, nah.
And I think, you know, you are really successful. Like, stop. This is the whole point. Like, even for someone like Glenn, who is phenomenally successful, author, award-winning person, podcaster, all the things, it doesn't mean that things aren't hard and that things aren't messy and that you've got everything perfect. You know, people might look at you and think that you've got everything, like,
they didn't see me binge eating all around Newcastle every night last week, did they?
We're eating Just Right. I'm now going home to buy Just Right.
It's so good.
No, I'm
it's
about it.
It's actually Just Right.
If they don't sponsor you, we're in somewhere, I don't know where something's wrong. But I think that that is important. And so success for me was, in my younger years, it was attributed to probably the role that I had and the company that I worked for, or aligned to an income amount that I got. And it's changed, and it's much more about how can I live a life that is purposeful and happy for me. And defining that's taken me a long time.
So when we first met,
yeah,
I remember I had my own business and you worked for a company that I dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been 26 or 7 at the time. So you would have been like 24 maybe, 23 when you came into my office.
Yeah, I was young.
Yeah.
I was one of the youngest. I think I was the youngest by a long shot, actually, in my corporate career. Yeah. I cut my teeth in
my office.
No, I didn't. In corporate. You know, I started at CBA when I was 18 and I worked there for 5 years. And then I moved over to Macquarie Bank. And, I was one of the youngest people in the team. So I got this really cool experience of corporate stuff from a young age. Because I'd grown up in an environment that, I mean, you know, we grew up in a similar area. Well, there was no corporate opportunities where we grew up. It was very blue collar. Not to say there's anything wrong with that. It was just different. And so I think I was a bit enamored by it in my early 20s. Mm. And I think I wrapped a lot of worth and success markers around that. And decoupling that for me was quite confronting and really important. And it's so much nicer on the other side.
As a 36-year-old financial advisor, podcaster, financially fierce, you've got the Greenhouse online course, so your own business, your own stuff, you're getting out there, you do a lot of speaking.
Yeah.
Financially in your own life, do you have any big financial goals? Like, are you like, all right, I'm 36 now, in 10 years I want to achieve this or that? You don't have to tell us amounts, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Some examples?
I take goals really seriously. I sat down and did like a 3-hour... like really deep session on my goals that I've been working with a goals coach with on a weekly basis for a long time. Yeah, I have a goals coach and I have for years. But I wanted to really go deeper on them. And so, I cut my goals short, medium and long term. I've got pretty specific things that I want to achieve over the next 10 years in terms of how I want, you know, the Greenhouse Money Growing program to work and how many lives I want to impact and the ripple and generational impact I want to have. And of course, that has a financial benefit and impact to me. Mm. Hilariously, I'm actually not very motivated by money, but I'm very motivated by the life it can give me. And that's, you know, my dad died when I was 20, when he was 27, when I was 4 months old.
Gosh. What did he die from?
He had a brain tumor. So my mum was a 25-year-old widow.
Well, that was my mate died from a brain tumor at age 30. He was diagnosed at 24.
Yeah, it's awful. It has a really low survival rate, unfortunately, particularly with children who have a brain tumor. And, you know, so I am very hyper aware that life is precious and I don't know how much I've got of it. And I love what I do, but I don't want to trade off my whole life to build bucket loads of money that I have no intention of spending. You know, I don't need gazillions of dollars, but I similarly want to have stability and independence.
What's your thing in terms of money, as in... I'll use an example. A friend of mine, when she gets to certain milestones, she might buy a $3,000 bracelet. Like, so she'll have almost like, I'll get to this milestone. I think we touched on it earlier. Like, this, once these goals met, I'll then spend this to celebrate.
Yeah.
Like, are you, if I get to this milestone, I'm buying a $2,000 Peugeot.
No,
convertible.
That was not, and it was, and I didn't, if you didn't tell me even a few months ago that I'd buy that, I would have laughed at you. No, I'm not a spendy person. I'm more of a savey person.
Yep.
I'm a bit of a tight ass, to be honest. And that's something that I've had to override a bit. So the only example that I can give you, which is not a good one because I've only done it once, was I sold my financial advice business that I'd co-founded, and I booked myself business class flights because I'm like, I'm a 36-year-old, single, childless human. I've just done this big thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend a bit of cash and go business class. And I'm sitting on the plane like the tight ass that I am going, this is so lovely and so not worth it.
Where did you fly?
I flew to Europe.
Oh, nice.
I went on this big trip and
Kind of worth it.
No, and look, I did sit there laying down, and I'm sorry if you've never flown business, not to sound like an absolute wanker about it, but you know, you lay down flat and I was doing the like hourly rate of how much it costs to do it. And I was like, oh, it's not that much, you know, I can get it. But for me, it's like I loved it and I'm glad that I did it and I'm glad I invested, you know, because it cost me a lot of money.
Yeah, but to me that says the celebration was an experience, not a thing.
Yeah, I'm a traveller. So yeah. I love solo I love travel. I've done most of my travel solo around the world.
Where is next travelling to?
Oh, I'm very sad because as I was in my hotel room, I wasn't in my hotel room, I was in my hospital bed.
What hospital? Because when I was in North Shore private here, it was basically a hotel.
Oh, no, I was not in the one that looked like a hotel. I was in a hospital bed on my birthday a couple of Fridays ago and I got an email about a trip that I was meant to be doing to Uganda in June to say it had been postponed. So that's really sad. So I'm not going to Uganda in June, but I am going to New Zealand to visit my family.
Oh, awesome.
In a couple of months.
Yeah, okay. Hmm. I mean, there's a bit of insight into Jess and some of the vibes that you'll get when you listen to her on the Financially Fierce podcast. My final question, if $10,000 fell into your lap tomorrow, bam, like what would you do with it? Go and buy another five $2,000 Peugeots? Or
no, I can only get one parking permit.
I just think that's the most hilarious thing, like a $2,000 car.
It's really good.
The last cheap car I bought was an $800 AU Falcon that had a weak rego.
Oh, I think the fact that it's got so much rego is what is the and it's done so little case.
I can't believe that.
Nothing
that's
about
wild.
Cars. They just needed to get rid of it, I think. They had a boat in there. They didn't need the money. I think they were basically just giving it away.
Oh, nice.
Talk to me once I've got my next service bill. We'll talk about that then. If 10 grand landed on my lap, what would I do with it?
Yep.
I think, back to my sort of the original question that we started today with, you know, I think it would be a split based on different percentages of stuff that is important to me. So I'd be wanting to have some fun and, you know, travel and experiences and things are really important to me, but so is looking after my medium and long-term goals. I'm doing doing some repairs and things on an investment property. So hopefully that doesn't require additional cash from me, but some of it might be chucked into that. Some of it might be chucked into my long-term investment bond, which is for my, you know, freedom.
Love it.
Maybe my dog would get some extra treats.
Well, I've got a surprise. I've got $10,000 right here for you.
Oh, my God. Where is it?
It's coming. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for having a chat with us today. It's been a lot of fun. The episode kind of didn't go anywhere to plan, but whatever. We're just chatting. We're just hanging out with you. It was a really cool chat around the budgeting thing because it's not a heap sexy topic, but if you nail your spending and your cash flow, you nail your behaviors, you'll nail your life. This is the reminder, everyone. If you haven't looked at your spending plan for 2 months, get it open, review it. The only way to make more money if you can't get a pay rise is to try and squeeze it out of what you're spending at the moment or save less. Like that's all you can do at the moment.
Agree.
So you've got to be super focused on the money that's coming into your life. And whatever you do from this moment forward, the decisions that you make following this little prompt to review your budget and review your spending plan, you lay in the bed you make. Now, if you decide that, I can't be bothered, I'm going to still use my Zip money loan to go to Scotland, that's fine. Just don't whinge that your life's a financial mess in 2 years' time if you don't change something. It's cause and effect. Am I in a mood today?
I think you are in a mood today. But what you're saying is right. It's harsh and sometimes
bedside manner probably isn't great today.
Yeah, look, it needs some work. But what you're saying fundamentally is right And if you go to Scotland, have a great time and send us a postcard. But
Scotland.
Scotland. If you go to Scotland, send us a postcard. And come back, dust yourself off and make changes because you're young and you've got a lot of life left and there's exciting stuff that sits on the other side of making these changes.
Absolutely. Well, if I've pissed you off and offended you, go and listen to Financially Fierce. It'll be much smoother than this. My name's Glenn James. This is Jess Brady. It's International Women's Day week, month, and we're just celebrating all the good things about women. Thursday this week, we've got an episode going up. And the next week, we've got another episode. I'm just trying to think. I did an episode with Iris Smith, who created the Quick Flick beauty brand.
Okay.
And she's crushing it. She went on Shark Tank.
Okay.
Got selected. Mm-hmm. And by the time she did all the DD, she turned down the money. She went solo because it just took off. Yeah. Crushing it.
Cool. Can't wait to listen to that
one. Yeah. She's coming to our Perth event, everyone. So come along. All right. Thanks, Jess. See you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. If you are interested in furthering your education around money, your career or property, we have three books that might help. Check out Sort Your Money Out, Sort Your Career Out and Sort Your Property Out. Find these wherever good books are sold or via the link in the podcast show notes. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.